Hello, folks. The second set of readings this first week focus on the research paper by Baglione, Schaefer-Landau's Ethical Subjectivism, and Caney's Chapter 2 on Universalism. Starting with a piece by Baglione, this is written for political science majors and might not be entirely relevant for our purposes, but it does motivate a couple considerations that I think are relevant for our class. So you just need to acknowledge the fact that whether it's political science or your own particular fields, there are going to be certain conventions to good writing that you need to familiarize yourself with. The skills that we're going to learn this semester are general transferable skills, writing skills that you should be able to apply in any particular context. But that said, Baglione and some of the other authors we'll be reading this semester suggest that these particular conventions in our particular disciplines are important to know. We'll come back to this idea. But one of the reasons that I emphasize this paper is the emphasis that Baglione places on the importance of writing a literature review, which is going to be your first major writing assignment. So read through this, take what you can from it. But this was largely intended for me to build on the first section's reading, the Knowing Words Chapter 6, which again I'm assuming is review, and you've got working knowledge of the components of the academic argument. But I wanted to emphasize that the general approach I would suggest that you take with your writing consists in these handful of components, so the structure of the paper itself. You start with an introduction to try to grab your reader's attention, give them reason to keep reading on. You explain the appropriate concepts and ideas to give the reader the context necessary to understand the argument you're going to make. This constitutes the background section. You develop the argument itself. This is always going to be the meat of the paper, the claim, the reasons and evidence, and the warrant, making very clear that you are engaging in proper analysis as well, where you are showing how each individual reason or piece of evidence works to support the truth of your thesis. And then engaging possible counterarguments. These are all notes the notes that I provide in the second section are largely copy-pasted from the first section as a matter of review. The counterargument section is really necessary to show the strength of your argument, the reason why your perspective prevails over other alternatives. And to do this properly, you need to do more than just state what the objection to your position could be. You need to show why it's plausible, but then ultimately explain why this plausible, reasonable objection to your argument is ultimately wrong. The conclusion, and I want you to take a slightly different approach with. I assume in most of your writing, your instructors have just expected a quick reiteration of what the central argument is. And that certainly is helpful. I mean, especially with some of these dense readings, one of the first things you might think to do is to read the abstract, which is a brief summary of the paper at the beginning of the article or the beginning of the chapter, or to read the conclusion to get a general sense of what the author is arguing. And that's fine, but in my opinion, the conclusion has to do more than that. So what I suggest is in your conclusions, try to focus on the important or problematic implications of your argument being true. If your analysis is correct, what would that mean for, say, the scholarship on your topic or to foreign policy decisions, like whether or not to intervene in future humanitarian crises, if you're looking at the Syrian crisis, for instance? Think about what the consequences are of your being right. That said, I'm giving you a lot of license, a lot of freedom as a writer to develop your own writing style. And if this structure, the introduction, the background, the argument itself, the counterargument, and the conclusion somehow doesn't fit your personality as a writer or your own expectations, you can feel free to diverge from this. This isn't a steadfast rule, a steadfast structure, and approach the paper your own way. I just want to make sure that at some point in the paper, wherever it is that you decide to place it, you are addressing each one of these components in some way or another. And this will become clear when I give you the rubrics. As long as I'm seeing that the expectations very clearly detailed in the rubric are being met, I really don't care how you approach your writing. That said, moving on to the Schaefer-Landau ethical subjectivism, This piece is supposed to be coupled with Kaney's chapter on universalism, because Schaeffer-Landau explains ethical subjectivism, or normative subjectivism, which is the antithesis to the universalism that Kaney assumes. This is supposed to be pressing on the fundamental assumption of global justice. Global justice, says Kaney, ultimately can't make any sense unless we have a concept of principles, moral principles, that are somehow objectively true, universally true. They're true in the United States, they're true in Iraq, they're true in the Soviet Union, and so we're able to engage in moral evaluations of actions and foreign policies, etc. And Schaeffer-Landau's piece gives you that alternative. Ultimately, he argues that conventional arguments in support of normative subjectivism are unconvincing, and conventional arguments in support of meta-ethical subjectivism, which is essentially saying whether or not a subjective moral theory can be true or false, these fare better, but ultimately are still vulnerable to certain objections. And again, the aim here is to develop an understanding of normative subjectivism as the antithetical position to Kaney's piece, which is what we're going to be assuming. We are studying global justice, and I agree with Kaney that we need to accept that moral principles are objectively true and universally true for this to make sense. So this is going to be a fundamental assumption that we're making, but I want you to feel comfortable with the alternative. That said, there are a lot of short arguments within the Schaeffer-Landau piece, and I don't want you to get overwhelmed or distracted by these. I give you 3 points that I want you to focus on for the Schaeffer-Landau piece. The first is that I want you to be able to explain what the difference between normative subjectivism and what he calls meta-ethical subjectivism is, and how normative subjectivists differ from objectivists. So how does a subjectivist, a normative subjectivist, differ from someone like Kaney, who is assuming that there are universal moral principles? And within the camps of the subjectivism, what's the difference between a normative theory of subjectivism and a meta-ethical theory of subjectivism? The other component I want you to concentrate on is one reason why the argument from tolerance fails. This is one of several arguments that folks have leveled, or folks have developed, in support of normative subjectivism, and I want you to be reading closely that section and understand how and why the argument from tolerance is ultimately problematic. And then lastly, what is one of the five problematic implications of normative subjectivism that Landau discusses? And why does meta-ethical subjectivism still entail that we abandon our aspirations for moral knowledge? So even if we can accept normative subjectivism as true, there are going to be problematic implications, problematic consequences of accepting that theory. And I want you to be able to give me at least one of those problematic implications. And if ultimately we do still accept meta-ethical subjectivism, somehow we're able to defend it, there's still this concern that we have to abandon this idea that we can gain greater moral knowledge, that we can somehow progress and become more enlightened morally. And I want you to be able to explain why. With Kaney's piece on universalism, then, this, as I said, is a central chapter to global justice as far as Kaney is concerned. We can't make sense of this concept of global justice without some concept of moral principles being universal. And I want you to ignore as much as you can the noise of all of the different moving pieces in this long chapter and focus on the 3 points that I emphasize. I want you to be able to define what universalism is, and I want you to be thinking what his purpose as a writer would be to qualify the claim that if universalism is true, which he says it is, it only applies to some moral principles. It's not that all moral principles are universal. And I want you to be thinking about why, as a writer, he would do that. I also want you to be thinking about the difference between universalism of scope and universalism of justification. These are two technical concepts that he uses, and why the distinction is important for his argument. This is going to be central. The scope of the principles we're talking about and the justification for those principles we're talking about. Be able to tease out that difference. And lastly, explain three reasons or pieces of evidence Caney uses to demonstrate the truth of his claim, and explain what the warrant or the underlying justification for his argument is. With a lot of these pieces, I'm going to give you direction as to what I'd like you to focus on, but the burden is still going to be on you to identify what you take the central argument to be. So always be trying to think, what is the claim? What are the reasons or pieces of evidence in support of that claim? What is the warrant that drives the entire argument? And be thinking critically whether there's an objection that you could level as well. But be in a position to reconstruct the arguments that I'm having you focus on. And this last piece on Caney is intended to do this, just that.